Welcome, and thanks for joining me today on Mortgage Manager Playbook, a podcast for sales leaders who want to improve their team's sales performance and originate more loans. I'm Pat Sherlock, your host.
Today, we're going to do a deeper dive on the ROI return of training and future trends. And I have my favorite MBA person, and that's David Uppman, who I've known for years. He's vice president of the MBA's education operations and is involved with the mortgage, the MBA's strategy. So hi, David.
Hey, Pat. Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Well, let's talk about this topic because I do think that certainly I'm seeing some slight changes with the view, but I'd like to hear kind of your thoughts on, and let's start off with the big picture. What type of investments would you say our industry or maybe versus other industries have been making to training?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I think it's one that's certainly difficult to answer, difficult to compare to previous years, given market conditions, sure, both for single family and commercial multifamily lenders. I mean, I think in my, 10 or 11 years with the MBA, this is the first time I've seen down markets on both sides of the aisle, but we are still seeing a continued investment into top performers. We still are seeing a lot of people go for their certified mortgage banker, go through School of Mortgage Banking 1, 2, and 3. Our Future Leaders program remains near sold out or even above sold out capacity. So I am seeing kind of those top flight high performers continue to be invested in or invest in themselves. You know, obviously, we're seeing a pullback at the more junior levels that correlates with the layoffs that we've seen. But I do expect that to return, as we see rates drop and some other market forces come into play. I did see a couple stats from 2023 data that shows on average about $954. I guess that's pretty specific, about $950 per learner going outside of kind of the required compliance training. So we all know that you have to take certain IT training, you have to take certain compliance training, depending on who your regulator is, but kind of that extra level, that leadership development, sales development, just professional networking, we are seeing about $1,000 per individual, which is down from previous years where it was typically maybe closer to $1,200 to $1,500. Interestingly, small companies continue to invest more in training. I don't know what that's attributed to, but smaller companies, which is typically defined by about 100 to 1,000 employees, which does cover a large swath of the MBA membership, particularly in the credit union, IMB, community bank space, we do see closer to about $1,500 per employee. And look, I think in this market conditions, if you're hitting those numbers, I think that's a pretty solid investment and a pretty solid signal that you're sending to your team that you're investing in their growth, their job satisfaction, comfort, and professional development.
So, David, talk about the issue about the types of training. I know that you've said before that the compliance training has always been popular, but the other types of investments that lenders are making, is it fitting into sales, operations, technology? Is it more about managing or what is it looking like?
Well, look, I mean, where MBA plays the biggest role is going outside of core sales training, soft skills. There are a number of great organizations and individuals that do that. Where we kind of play and where I think the role of the MBA is to how do we elevate individuals not only to be great professionals within their organization, but great professionals within the industry. And Future Leaders is a perfect example of that. The program, yes, we want to make great leaders within a company, great managers, how to communicate, how to team build, but we also want to help students understand how to advocate, how to go to Capitol Hill and have that conversation with their lawmaker or the lawmaker's chief of staff, how to take research data and bring it back to their employees so they can say, hey, here's what's going on in the marketplace. Here's what the MBA is seeing. Here's what I'm seeing. And here's what we're feeling that's impacting the company culture or the bottom line, particularly in a down market. So, you know, when I think of MBA, I think it's tying together not just the education, so not just how to underwrite a loan file or how to calculate tax returns, but then also to put it in the context of what's going on in the industry, what's going on the policy front. And we do make a really concerted effort to bring in policy staff, whether that's from the commercial multifamily or the single family team or Bill Kilmer's lobbyists, Mike Fratantoni's research team, to kind of tie in the data, the policy, the advocacy, along with the education. So I think that's incredibly critical. You know, for more junior staff, you know, we have the self-paced courses, the ones that are a little bit more kind of point and click, nuts and bolts, get your certificate completion, get on your way. But as you start to progress into that maybe director AVP level, I'm starting to think a little bit more globally about how you can be a great industry leader and industry professional.
So, David, have you seen a greater interest in managing skill sets? Has there been more of a recognition by lenders that to manage in difficult markets, you have to have a skill set?
And I don't know if I've seen it. I hope it's there. MBA is here to offer that service if the company recognizes a need. We actually just partnered with a pretty high-powered executive coaching firm called the Fast Forward Group to provide exactly what you just described, core management skills, knowing that, look, in any organization, people get promoted that may not be ready. You know, they may be high performers, high flyers as originators, but when it comes time to explaining how to do the business and how to succeed, maybe they fall short. So we've partnered with the Fast Forward Group, which has over 50 executive coaches, all of them certified coaches, and really created a low price package that includes 5 coaching sessions, a one-on-one with the coaching expert, and a bunch of additional resources to really lower the cost of that executive training and make it easier, because that's the training that's kind of hard to convince yourself to do, right? And hard to commit to. And it does create stickier conversations. Employees who are being recommended for the training may start to, you know, be a little bit, you know, pessimistic, or why am I being picked? Is this a job performance issue? When really a lot of times when you're being invested in, it's because there's a bright future for you in the organization. So definitely encourage lenders and members to check out what we have with Fast Forward Group. But there's a whole industry out there of executive coaching that I think is underutilized, underappreciated, and definitely encourage, you know, the industry to take advantage of it.
So is there more of an interest also in the fintech world? In other words, that training on how to use technology, because as I've mentioned to you many times, that I do see a disconnect between even how to use the technology when you're talking about the field level positions, that they really don't, the basics, even getting on a Zoom, I've had classes where that's really hard to get them.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And look, I've seen people who, you know, were employed throughout the pandemic that have been in the industry for 20 plus years, and MBA employees who still struggle to get on Zoom calls and get the meeting kicked off. So no, it's a point well taken, and something that we should probably do more of, but certainly kind of in the fintech, the AI space, definitely doing more programming. I think we've done about 6 or 7 webinars this year alone, specific to servicing, underwriting, processing, origination, on how you can begin to use AI. And I do think we are getting to the point where we need to just have practical training on, here are the prompts, here's what you should be doing, here's what's free, here's what's not free if you want to use an investment. But there's also a lot of conversations going around at the committee level. So, you know, stepping outside of just core education, you know, make sure you're joining any MBA committees, because that's where the conversations are being had about what members are doing, what are some of the challenges, the compliance risks that come along with AI and some of those emerging technologies, which I think we don't even still know the full scope of at this point. But again, it's kind of tying it back to all of the things that MBA has to offer: education, advocacy, and bringing it all home together.
So David, have you seen, when you've looked over the more difficult last couple of years, is there more interest in remote or actually instructor-led, or what is that looking like?
I think the need for instructor-led has remained consistent throughout COVID. You know, it feels like we've had COVID. Maybe we had about a six-month window of kind of normalcy, and then we kind of slid into the, you know, the more difficult times. So hard to really say what's normal at this point. But instructor-led is still the premier training. That's the one that members crave. The question is whether members are willing to spend those travel dollars and have the staff outside of the office for multiple days, which I totally get. What I am seeing, and using School of Mortgage Banking 1, 2, and 3 as an example, I'm seeing a lot of member companies saying, hey, we'll do the virtual online version of School 1 and 2. And then if you're ready for School 3 and you've shown that you can pass the test and you've got that aptitude and that desire to learn, we'll pay for the staff travel to go to School 3. So I am seeing a little bit more curtailing on the travel front for more of the basic fundamentals training. And then as you get into kind of more of the meatier management training, leadership training, again, future leaders, School of Mortgage Banking 3, that's where I'm still seeing a strong desire to be in person. And look, that also just means the networking opportunities, right?
Mm-hmm, you know, sure.
Someone who goes to School of Mortgage Banking 1, you know, they may be 0 to 3 years in the industry. They may, you know, be, you know, kind of an entry level underwriter, but as they're moving up to School 3, you're starting to get into that director ADP level. And that's where they really want to hear from others, see others, meet others, and do that kind of proverbial exchange of business cards. So a little bit of a mixed bag. I do think virtual it's here to stay. And, you know, I think that's an okay thing. MBA has worked hard to, you know, make the Zoom experience as interactive as possible. You can only go so far, but it's here to stay.
And so when you look at the pricing mechanism within our industry, the funding source of all training really is at the branch level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not still really something that's considered a corporate advantage, even in recruiting. And so this model of the branch being the branch manager, who's typically a producing manager, is going to have to fund it. What are your thoughts on this? And really, it's pretty unusual versus other industries to have that type of setup. But talk about how you view what you see.
No, it's a good point. And we've moved towards a bunch of different packages, mainly our Education Advantage, which is priced either at, it can be priced at the branch level in terms of the volume, number of employees. So not all branches are created equal.
Sure.
It can be priced at the company dues level. So the higher dues, the higher the price. And that's kind of our measurement for the number of employees. So we have created ways that branches, that companies, that regions, you know, depending on what the structure is, can write that one check and know that that's their investment for the year. And then the students receive, you know, what's in essence unlimited access to the library of self-study courses, which includes the compliance training. So you're checking that box.
Mm-hmm.
And it includes the certifications and designations, the Schools of Mortgage Banking. So kind of everything that's underneath the umbrella, by and large, with some exclusions, but you know, most things that are underneath the education umbrella. So the individual isn't having to dip into their pockets or make that budget request, or you know, you can kind of track your training spend and your bottom line a little bit easier. So we definitely have heard that, we've seen that, and want to make sure we're able to treat the branches like their own mini company.
Which would be smart. So talk about the issue of the skin in the game. I certainly hear lenders talking about that they want the employee to have skin in the game, and therefore they're hesitant to make the investment. I mean, this is the conversations I have, versus if I do invest in them and someone else recruits them, then I've just wasted my training dollars. And I'm sure you've heard that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's part of the reason why we see some companies shy away from in person. I think maybe they're a little skittish about, you know, the the other networking that comes along, job poaching, or people seeing the grass is greener. I don't have much to offer in that realm, but when I think of skin in the game, I do think of the option of having employees commit some of their own personal dollars to the investment in training. And, Just for an example, School of Mortgage Banking 1 is around $1,600, $1,800 for one registration. I don't think it's crazy to ask the individual to put up, maybe 250 of their own dollars to make sure that they understand what the commitment is, what the effort is. I mean, we are very good about tracking progress and completions. So we are able to provide that certificate of completion. So you as the manager know that you didn't just spend $1,800 for somebody not to take the final exam. The final exams, they're rigorous. They're very fair. So we want to make sure students are passing, but we try to give the as much confidence that the investment is being utilized for good and being taken advantage of.
So is there been tracking on the performance of the companies that have made these investments versus companies, mm-hmm. let's say, that haven't? I mean, that's always what it comes down to. What is the ROI on training? And any thoughts on that?
Yeah. So, I mean, coincidentally, in this, this podcast or this interview, it's good timing because we just reviewed our Educator of the Year submissions. And this was particularly for residential member companies. And we had submissions from large banks, large credit unions, non-depositories, small community banks. So it really was a good snapshot on how members look at their ROI. I think the first thing that stood out to me is looking at it not just as training, but the program level. So looking at your school, and again, I keep using School of Mortgage Banking 1 as an example, looking at your School of Mortgage Banking 1 investment, understanding what you're spending in that program, and then doing a look back and being really bottom up about our students a year later, are students better off after they took the course? Are they more comfortable with the job? Have they made more connections in the industry? You can kind of come up with what those KPIs and those measures are depending on the individual. But really look at it as an individual line item within the training budget. I think at a more macro level, looking at employee retention and turnover. So, is employee retention going up commensurate with your increase in training dollars or inversely? Employee satisfaction, MBA just went through our employee engagement survey, and a lot of it ties back to, you have the training that you need? Do you have the job resources, the information you need? So looking at employee satisfaction. And then, again, coming back to my point earlier, just about, are people taking advantage of what's available? So if you have this huge investment in training courses, some of it may not be required, and you're seeing one person take advantage of a lot, that's a sign of an engaged employee and someone who's committing themselves to the industry. So just kind of taking a look at employee and student behavior about what is being consumed. Are students starting the course and not completing it? I mean, I think that's a sign that you're maybe kind of, serving up something that's not very appetizing. The students are kind of clicking through and saying, this is not for me. But so I would start there. So I would start, looking again, very bottom up, what is your investment into particular programs? Is it paying off? Retention, turnover, satisfaction, engagement at more of the macro level.
So have there been any results from this analysis of where, is there a differentiation in other industries? The better trained are also the better performing companies. And so,
I don't have the data at my fingertips, but I know there's a direct correlation, particularly in retention and job satisfaction. With the increase in training and the focus on training. And it's just, and you also need, and this is the hardest part, you need to give your employees the grace and the time and kind of that runway to take advantage of the training, because there's no worse feeling than employees feeling like, oh my goodness, I've got a 9 to 5 that it's actually more like 9 to 8, 9 to 9 PM. And then I'm being asked to take this training. You really need to find coverage, find ways for individuals to be able to go off the grid. So when they go to School of Mortgage Banking 1 and it's 4 days in Dallas or Future Leaders, they can close their laptop, turn over their phones and know full well that their manager is going to cover for them or someone else on the team is going to cover for them. Because that's what I hear the most is, disgruntlement. Is that even a word? Disgruntlement about, you know, being told that they should take this training, and then coming back to, you know, a firestorm back at work.
And so when you're looking at it, and that's more at the field level, but when you're looking at it at the top level, has the interest in senior management being what I would call more highly skilled in improving their own type of skill sets that they need?
Yeah, no, I think that comes back to the need for better succession planning, just strength across the board. So, you know, going back to the educator of the year examples, I'm seeing a lot of those companies invest in tuition reimbursement, encouraging people to get their master's degree, to get their CPA. So investing those dollars to enable the C-suite professionals to continue growing, continue developing. So yes, it never stops. It shouldn't stop. I think at some point it probably flips more to the onus of the individual as they progress up through their career. And I would, you know, encourage organizations to not lose track of their leaders and the C-suite, because they can easily leave too. And you want to keep them around and make sure that succession planning, that institutional knowledge is strong. So continue to invest in them, whether it's through master's degrees, attending of conferences, you know, there's a whole variety of resources and options.
So what type of programs do you have for the senior leaders?
Future Leaders, I think, is a program that, you know, it's a little bit of a misnomer in how we title it. It really can be for anyone who's either aspiring to be a leader or already is and just wants to take it to the next level. And in any given year, we have, you know, a couple C-suite professionals in the Future Leaders program. This is a program that puts you at the National Advocacy Conference, so in the room with people who understand the importance of lobbying and advocacy, the people who are really thinking more globally about the industry. It puts you in connection with vendors, with servicers, with lenders, with compliance professionals. So it builds your networking base. It puts your feet over the coals in terms of public speaking and presentations and group work. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that maybe, you know, maybe you moved up the corporate ladder really quick and now you've kind of forgotten some of it, and you need to take a step back. So encourage the Future Leaders program. Certainly School of Mortgage Banking 3. That's a program I'm not quite sure a lot of people understand. That is a 4-day in-person course that puts 6 teams of 6 against each other. And we throw variable market conditions at them, and the team who has the most profitability at the end of the course wins. So it's an entirely a participation-based course. There's no test at the end. We've seen a lot of larger companies do private Schools of Mortgage Banking 3. Well, they'll bring in teams. The teams might be the branches. They might be different departments, and competing against each other to see who's reacting, you know, the best. And are you moving to different channels? Are you hiring more underwriters? Are you investing in more marketing? I mean, the options that you can choose from are really unlimited, and it's a great team building exercise. And again, a great way to show those people who, you know, maybe at that AVP, VP level, that you're still investing in them and still caring for their professional growth. So yes, our training is predominantly more focused on the junior kind of, you know, maybe newer entrant, but there is a lot at the top, and you know, we want to make sure that learning path is always ongoing.
Is there anything, David, particularly for producing managers? Because obviously in our setup in our industry, they are managers in name, but they really are producers. And so, and this is common whether you're credit, you know, in any type of the setup. So anything in particular that would be appropriate for them?
Yeah, I think our taking a step back from School 3, I think our School of Mortgage Banking 2 is an incredible course that really has them, you know, they're producing managers, but now they're starting to think like business owners, business leaders. So profitable production management, starting to think about what the expenses are and where are some of the constraints, understanding the technology investment that may be being made at corporate headquarters that, you know, they don't kind of see, but understanding what those challenges are, and then really understanding how pricing is set and how profit is made. Because I think a lot of people in the loan officer role, they originate, but they don't understand, you know, the capital secondary market side of it. So this talks about the art and science of pricing, the mortgage servicing right. What do you retain your servicing? Do you go to a subservicer? Or, you know, what changes of economic conditions? It's a meaty class. And I think if you're looking for your branch manager, your producing manager to be a well-rounded mortgage banker, School of Mortgage Banking 2 is a tremendous course that will make them a stronger professional.
So if you had to look at, and again, I know this is a global question, but, uh-huh. And it sounds like the kind of heart of who you really get the investments from are really 100 to 1,000 employees, it sounds like it. When you're saying that, how does that break down, like from an operational standpoint versus a sale? When you're saying 100, is it 80 sales, 80 loan officers, and 20, you know, what does that look like?
I think we're probably lower on the loan officer side than you may expect. Mm-hmm. I mean, the loan officers have, you know, a lot of them have their NMLS training that they need to get. There's mm-hmm. kind of that required compliance training maybe that everyone has to take. But we're seeing probably more individuals, servicers, underwriters, processors, operations professional, technology. We see a lot of people who, you know, maybe they're in the IT vendor management group, but they need to understand the loan life cycle. You know, they don't understand the acronyms, the lingo. So we see a lot of that. We've had several private schools of mortgage banking, one just for IT professionals. The company would say, hey, I need my IT team to understand what the heck we're talking about. And why is this system important? And who's going to be using it? And how does it interact with other systems? So that's where we probably see most of our students come from. I would say as you start moving up in the world on the loan origination side and you become more of that branch manager, regional manager, then we start seeing them gravitate towards schools of mortgage banking, because I think then they recognize like, oh, I need to understand the bigger picture. And we do have about 10 to 15 branch managers, loan officers get their CMB designation, the Certified Mortgage Banker designation every year. And that makes my heart flutter. And that makes me smile that the loan officer, you know, wants to prove that they understand the capital markets. They want to understand servicing. They understand compliance. And they're kind of putting it all together and piecing it all together. And that's really what we want. And that's, you know, who we want to nurture and be in students.
So let's talk about the future. And let's talk about some of the things that you're working on that would be appropriate for managers to think about.
Sure. So I'll give a little hat tip to Laura Escobar, the head of Lennar Mortgage, who is now soon to be the chair of the MBA, for bringing the idea. I don't think it's a terribly groundbreaking idea, but really kind of forcing the issue that we need to do a better job of getting mortgage banking training in the hands of college students or people maybe who have recently graduated college. Mm-hmm. Who just don't know that single family real estate finance is an option. And that even within that, it doesn't just mean the loan officer that you interacted when you purchased your first home. It could mean being a servicer. It can mean being an underwriter, a technology professional. So we have kind of relaunched the Mortgage Banking Bound brand, and we have brought it to two schools, Berry University in Miami Shores, Florida, and Middle Tennessee State University, just south of Nashville in Murfreesboro. And we're also in conversations with a school in the Metro Dallas, Texas region, and then in the Metro Denver region. And we are really trying to be intentional about educating people who may be the next generation, and going well beyond just basics of housing finance, going beyond just kind of financial aptitude or what does good credit mean, but really teaching them how to understand how to underwrite a loan, how to be a processor, what are the different areas of mortgage servicing, going into REO, foreclosure, default, compliance. So when they walk away from this, they walk away with a certificate of completion from the university, but they have really demonstrated that they're ready to enter this job market and be job ready on day one. And look, I've heard stats from some non-depositories that it sometimes costs six figures, which is kind of unfathomable, six figures to onboard a brand new employee when they know nothing about the industry in terms of just getting them on board, getting them trained, knowing that they're not going to be originating or servicing, you know, right off the bat, any compliance related. So we're trying to lower the cost, lower the risk of onboarding someone who's new to the industry. And I think this industry for a long time has been reluctant to seek out new talent. So we're trying to change that narrative and get students excited about careers in mortgage banking.
So are they receiving a grade?
They are receiving a grade. So the content, the assessments are all provided by my team at MBA. So it's been vetted for the past 50 years. It kind of follows the same update path that all of our courses do. The course is completely taught by industry professionals. It is not just one adjunct professor who kind of reads one chapter ahead. I'm bringing in processors to teach the processing section. I'm bringing in capital markets professionals to teach the secondary and capital market sections, lawyers to teach compliance, because I want people who are practicing right now, who are passionate about what they do, and who have an interest in growing the next generation. And then yes, a score of 75% or higher, I believe, on a question bank that is over 300 questions, students receive this certificate of completion. So my hope is that you can look at this pool of candidates and be confident that, you know, not to use a football cliche, but maybe they're already on the 20-yard line when before you'd be starting from brand new.
So when you look at, let's say, in 2025, I mean, what available pool of students would actually be ready
so
to?
We've had two classes with Barry University, one with Middle Tennessee State. Spring of 2025, we'll bring another class with each of those two schools. And then we'll probably onboard the additional two schools I mentioned in the Dallas region and the Denver region in later 2025. We target about 30 students per class. And, you know, I don't want to make this to be biology, you know, 100, where there's 150 students in the class. I want there to be that student to teacher ratio where students feel comfortable raising their hand or walking over to the industry professional who's instructed at the end of the class and introducing themselves. So goal is about 25 to 30 students per class. So right now we have about 75 people who have gone through the course, and the goal is to be methodical with our growth. You know, we know, hiring remains limited right now, but we want to show the industry that we're investing in the success of their future leaders and industry professionals.
So will these students, in other words, are you job placing them, or how does that work?
Yep. So what we do is we conclude each class with a relatively informal job fair, but I'll invite, 8 to 10 lender, servicer, member companies to meet with the students at the end. And we do, we call it speed dating, where they walk around and introduce themselves and bring their resumes. What I do is I post jobs that I see that come open or that are pushed towards me. I post them in the learning management system for the students that are currently in the class. I've got an email distribution list for these students. So if you have entry-level job openings or a job that you think could be a right fit, you can always feed it towards me and I'll blast it out to the students. So, what I tell the students is the Mortgage Bankers Association, we don't have the jobs. We're 150 people and have a few job openings a year, but what we do have are 2,200 member companies that are around the country. So I can be the one to connect the dots and make sure that resumes get flagged and these students kind of, get elevated. We don't make any job promises. We do really put the students in charge of their futures, but I'm here and MBA is here to be that connector between the two.
And so anything else that you're working on for 2025?
I would keep an eye again. I would keep an eye on the Future Leaders Program. We're really investing in that to dive deeper into your 360 assessment and understand your strengths and weaknesses. So make that a really robust program. Mortgage Banking Bound will continue to grow in 2025 and beyond. And then I did launch 9 different modules for board members. So we haven't talked about board members, but members of the board or senior executives who may not come from the industry, but who are kind of carrying that heavy risk management hat and need to understand the nuts and bolts of the industry and really what questions they need to be asking the senior leadership at mortgage companies to know that the right decisions are being made and the right policies and procedures are in place. So we have launched a board training program with really some of the best and brightest instructors and thinkers in the industry. So think about 90-minute topics, 90-minute modules covering tech and cybersecurity, mortgage servicing rights, core risk management, ESG, D&I, and corporate social responsibility. There really hasn't been anything before specific to mortgage companies at the board level. So we're excited to launch that program.
That's great. Anything else?
I think that's enough for me at this point. we'll interview me next year and I'm sure I'll have something else, but that's enough for now.
Well, we're down to the last few minutes. And David, do you want to hit some highs on a couple of takeaways for our listeners today?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one, I appreciate you having me. I love talking about it. I would love, as people listen to this, to meet your acquaintance. I'll be at the annual convention in October. I try to attend, as many conferences I can, MBA and non, and would just love to chat about what a solid investment means for learning and development. And MBA, I love to think of ourselves as a one-stop shop, but we're not. There's other vendors out there, and would love to talk about what the options are, how to think about training and development and help your organization grow. And looking forward to kind of rates continuing to come down and a bit more hiring and a little bit more action. So looking forward to 2025 and beyond.
Well, I want to thank you for joining with us today and certainly sharing our wisdom and all the great things that you're doing. So I'm excited to hear about them, and I'm sure our listeners are too. And I want to certainly recommend those listening today to go to patcharlock.com to listen to some of our other podcasts. Thanks so much, David.
Thanks, Pat. You're great.
Thanks for listening to Mortgage Manager Playbook. You can catch up on all our episodes by subscribing to receive each week a new show. Don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and team members. If you're looking to increase production, call me to discuss my prospecting sales training program, Ramping Up Realtor Referral Sources. Check out my website, www.patsherlock.com.